Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on 2008 in review when we come back. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it. A Budweiser six-pack has a 43% tax. And a fifth of Jack Daniels is taxed 72%. Now, you know, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. But what is it that government does to produce, prepare, or deliver, for which it gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Does the guy in the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on that pizza that he has to buy the ingredients to make, prepare it, cook it, serve it, and then pay rent on the store where you sit to eat it? Well, why is it that government's getting paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that we all buy? Now, if you'd like more information about this tax and status issue, why don't you call us here at the law school and ask for our free general law CD package? That's a lot of good information about this thing of taxation. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. Now, our Tax and Status School is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, talking about the year 2008 in review, as I speak, there's an unfolding story on a fellow by the name of Bernie Madoff. This guy, Bernie Madoff, here in just the month of December, has been revealed to have been operating a Ponzi scheme in which he ripped off $50 billion from his investors. Now, a Ponzi scheme, the guy Ponzi was an Italian guy, and he lived back in the East, I think it was New York or someplace like that, back in the 1920s. And he was a poor guy. I mean, you know, he's just a Joe Sixpack like the rest of us, but he's ambitious. And so he started a little investment program over postage stamps. He discovered that there was an arbitrage spread between the price of postage stamps in Italy and the price of postage stamps in the United States. And so he was taking advantage of this arbitrage. And then, as time progressed along, he got to making a little money, and so he got to taking other people's money, you know, to invest in stamps. And so, as time progressed along, he was taking their money, and then he would give them a return, a high return for their investment money, which then brought in more people. You know, one guy knows 10 others, and so the next thing you know, he's got hundreds and thousands of people that want to give him their money to invest. So he takes the money that he's supposed to be investing, but he doesn't invest it. Instead, he turns around and he pays the former investors their high rate of return, and then he keeps a bunch of it himself. But there's a constant growth in the base of people that are giving him money. So money is just flowing in here. I mean, his cash flow is phenomenal. Now, he's not investing in anything. He's not making any money. And then, of course, ultimately, by geometric progression, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, you'd have to have everybody in the world involved in the scheme, and you run out of customers is what happens. And then when the thing runs out of customers, it reaches a peak, and then you can't pay these high rates anymore, and the thing collapses. It's called a Ponzi scheme. Social Security is patterned after that Ponzi scheme. Now, that sounds kind of shocking to the average Joe Sixpack. My God, no, that can't be. You know, our politicians, Republicans and Democrats and economists, and hell, those people are all paid shills, those politicians, you know. They're bought and paid for whores, and they're bought and paid for by people like this Bernie Madoff. Now, Madoff has a lot of money. I mean, if you think that stealing $50 billion is something, I don't know how much this money's got, but you can rest assured that he's a multi-billionaire. Okay, so he's got plenty of money. He doesn't need a Ponzi scheme. T-Boone Pickens, you know. He's already a multi-millionaire. He doesn't need to drill an oil well to make money. He's got lots of them already. So, rich people very seldom involve themselves in these kinds of crimes because there isn't any point to it. He's already got all the money in the world. Now, a little guy like Ponzi, see, he's a little guy like us. He's trying to figure out how to make a buck, and so he comes up with this idea, and then he gets out of hand, and he kind of goes bonkers. And I don't even know if Ponzi could count. I don't know if he was an economist or that he had a degree, you know, in economics or anything. He's just smart enough, you know, streetwise kind of guy. But this guy Madoff, he's not just streetwise. This guy's well-educated, well-connected, and he belongs to the right organizations and so on. And so he was at one time the president of the NASDAQ, and, of course, that gives you a lot of credentials. You know, it isn't like you're sending your money to George Gordon, you know, to invest in a gold mine in the Pacific Trench. You know, you're investing your money here with a guy who's a proven winner, and a proven money manipulator, a banker is what he is. He's an investment banker. And so it demonstrates, though, something to us. The rich and the high and mighty, they also get ripped off, just like us little guys down here at the bottom. And they got ripped off because they violated a fundamental law, a fundamental rule of law, and that is thou shalt not steal. And so all of these people that got ripped off by Bernie Madoff got paid back for the violation of a law. That's all. They broke a law, and the penalty for that law is the loss of your money. And it's happening to us little guys down here, and has been for years and years. We dabble in interest and usury. We buy houses on time. We buy cars on time. And it keeps us impoverished. There's an old adage that says that the debtor is servant to the lender. The debtor is servant to the lender. And so there's another law here in the Bible. It's in Leviticus 19, 35, and 36. You might write that down. It's Leviticus. That's the third book of the Bible, Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. And then there's a corollary to that. It's in Deuteronomy. That's the fifth book, both of them written now by Moses. Deuteronomy, I believe it's 23. Or 25. Well, shucks. I guess I ought to look it up. If I got a Bible here on my desk. Nope, I don't. Well, write down Leviticus 25, 13 through 16. Now, those verses I remember. It might be in chapter 22, 23, 24, but I think it's Deuteronomy 25, 13 through 16. And here's what it tells us. It tells us that you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Don't deal in paper. Don't deal in stocks and bonds. Don't deal in these unjust weights and balances, these fictions. But, you know, we're smarter than God, and so we go out and we want to invest in the stock market. We want to invest in bonds. We want to put our money, our excess money, our savings, into municipal bonds so that we can get paid 5% interest so that we don't have to pay any tax on it. You know, sneaky little things like that. And we do. We make profit off of it, and then we feel real good about that. And like playing in a crap game, you know, there's winners and there's losers. Like playing in the lottery, there's going to be a few winners, but most people are losers. So if you take a look at how many people win in the stock market, bond markets, you know, so on, it's one in a thousand or so. And typically, it's the brokers or the bankers like Madoff who make the money, and the little guys like us take it in the shorts. But the way they covered this up, I covered in the last program. The way they covered up is genius. I mean, these guys are absolute geniuses. Watch what happens. They come to you and they say, invest your money, $10,000 in the stock market in 1960. And you do. Okay. And you leave your money in the Dow Jones Industrials for 40 years. And in the year 2000, 40 years later, you cash out. So in 1960, you buy in for 10. In 2000, you cash out. And how much money did you make? Well, you made 5% compounded annually for 40 years. So you walk out of there with $73,000. God, you are just ecstatic. Boy, am I smart. See? Okay, so you made 7 times on your investment. And they call that smart investing for the long term. And they've ingrained that in people today, the baby boom generation. They actually believe that. And so the nominal, they call this the nominal profit, is $63,000. You get your $10,000 back plus $63,000 profit. All right. Now you got to pay tax on the $63,000, and so let's just plug it in here: $63,000 times 0.28, which is the capital gain tax. You got to pay $17,640. So out of your $60,000 profit, you got to pay about $20,000 of it, round numbers. You know, so you about a third of it, not quite, but you know, 25%. So it's $15,000, but anyway, you made $45,000 after taxes. You made $45,000. Now here's what nobody ever tells you: during that same period of time, there was a gradual price increase called inflation. It's called the hidden tax, and this inflation or this hidden tax took 4.7% of your profit in higher prices. So if you took a car, how much would your $10,000 buy back in 1960? And the answer is $10,000 in 1960 would buy 4 1960 Chevrolet Corvairs. So buy 4 1960 Chevys. All right, now take your $73,000 in 2000. And how many 2,000 Chevrolets could you buy? I think about that time they were around $15,000 a piece. $15,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. You could buy 4. How much profit did you make? None. So you thought you made a profit, but you made none. It was just a little bit worse than that. If you take inflation at 4.7%, and you let that eat on your 1960 $10,000 investment, you lose $3,800. That's the net loss. And so you don't have $10,000 left anymore in purchasing power. Your $10,000 actually lost $3,800. Now, you people go to college and you get degrees after your names, and you go out here in the marketplace and you work, and it's true, you are making more dollars. In 1960, I was working for wages. I was getting $2.50 an hour, which was top wages, and then it went up to $3 an hour for skilled help. So in 1960, if you were making $3 an hour, now today it's $17.58. And if you're skilled help, you know, carpenter, plumber, electrician, something, you're making $17.58. So let's take our 17.58 and divide that by 3, and it's 5.86, or about 6 times more money. So today you're getting 6 times times more money, but you got to have your wife working also in order for you to live the same standard of living that we did in 1960. And that's because in 1972, that was the last year that you had a wage increase. Every year from that point on, you've been losing money. Until today, we're down to 18% loss. You are living poorer today in 2008 by 18% on average, you know, straight across the board on average. Now, the moneyed classes of people in America aren't living poorer. They're living better and better. And they're the people who are encouraging us to spend our money and use this paper money and use it in stocks and bonds and real estate and one thing and another. Now, have you noticed how much money we're losing in real estate and stocks and bonds and so on? We're just losing our shirts, aren't we? All right. Now, this is predictable. It's always been this way. I don't know where you went to school, but, you know, when you take a look at history, you go back here, you notice 1692, and then you carry this forward as we do in our business school, Chapter 3, A History of Paper Money in America. And you take a look at the history of paper money in America from 1692, I mean, you know, in the colonies, in the colonial period. And it's just a repeat of what you're seeing today in 2008. History repeats itself. You've probably heard that story. Okay, so we've been through this many, many times. Now, you probably didn't know that. So if you went to public school like I did, probably didn't know that. All right, now, in the International Forecaster, let me give you the International Forecaster. On page 19 in the December 20th issue, there's some behind-the-scenes story about this guy named Bernie Madoff. See, that you haven't heard on the Main Street Press, and you're not likely to, because see, it's politically incorrect. Bernie Madoff is a Jew, which isn't bad necessarily. I'm not here, you know, arguing about Jews are bad people. I'm just here to point out that he has a religious, political, and philosophical ideology. Now, it isn't surprising that he is a New York Jew and in a banker, because most of them are. If you went back and took a look at the people in New York, you know, all the people that are in government now, you know, like Ben Bernanke and Henry Paulson and this guy, Bernie Madoff and so on, these people are Jews. And they make a lot of money. And they make money on paper money. Bankers, government, and big business, you know, like General Motors and so on, they make money. They make profit off of these unjust weights and balances that we were told not to deal in. And when we deal in it, we lose money. We lose our shirts. These guys make it. Henry Paulson is reported to have collected $600 million working for Goldman Sachs. Well, that's pretty good money. So you can understand why Ben Bernanke and Henry Paulson and all these investment bankers want paper money. They want unjust weights and balances because they make profit off of it. So that's that story. Now, let me give you a little behind-the-scenes story here from the International Forecaster, which you can get a subscription to by just going to Bob Chapman. The guy's name is Robert Chapman. He's an old man now, Robert Chapman. And if you're online, you can go to the internationalforecaster.com. It's easy enough, www.theinternationalforecaster.com. It's $160 a year. Comes out twice a week. And it tells you the news behind the news. Now, there is a story in the December 20th issue about Madoff, see, that you haven't heard, didn't know, and I'm going to reveal it to you right now. So it's the internationalforecaster.com. Now, watch this. He says, "Hi, Bob. This is from a fellow subscriber. Rumor has it that Mark Izzy Dreyer is a Zionist, and that previously he was a lawyer to the stars. So there might be more Bernie Madoff type of co-religionist rip-offs as per your reporting. Maybe the hard lesson to the subscriber base in all of this is that now co-religionists of all religions need to do a rethink of the downside of living your life as caste robots. and that your friends are not always your friends and instead turn out to be your worst enemies. The JDL and the ADL's silence on all of these scandals is deafening. All right, so there's one guy writes in and he says, okay, here's my 2 cents worth. The second guy says this, says, hi, Bob. Rumor has it that the main directors of Madoff's firm all had fraud insurance policies with Lloyd's of London. The Madoff criminal indictment was necessary in order to activate the fraud insurance coverage. Rumor has it that both of Madoff's sons are in on it. And also, rumor has it that the judge that he appeared before was enlightened as to what was really going on. The main idea here is that Madoff is trying to steal the same money twice. This is skilled malpractice of the highest order. So it was not really a Ponzi scheme. No mistakes were made. It was more like a Mayor Lansky scheme. And everything is going exactly according to plan. Okay, so let's stop and think about that for a minute. The judge is in on the scam. Now, this guy Madoff, do we arrest him and put him in jail? No. He's come in, pled not guilty. And so now he's been sent home to his $7 million Park Avenue apartment wearing an ankle bracelet. Now, let me make a prediction here. Do you remember at the end of the Clinton years, Bill Clinton pardoned a bunch of people? And I think Robert Vesco, if I remember right, was one of them. See, Vesco had stolen $2 billion. And so Bill Clinton pardoned him. He was convicted, you know, for... Now, Madoff, if he goes to trial, he'll be convicted. A jury's going to convict this guy. And then the president will pardon him. These Illuminists never go to jail. I mean, he hasn't spent a minute in jail. And that's because he stole $50 billion in a Ponzi scheme. Well, listen, this isn't a Ponzi scheme. This isn't an accident. This isn't some guy like Ponzi over here trying to make a buck. This guy was already rich to start with. And he didn't steal $50 billion, he stole $100 billion. And all the money's intact, and it's sitting in Israel today. How do you like that? Listen to this third story. It says, rumor has it that Madoff actually stole closer to $100 billion, and that most of his money is still intact in Israel. As per your recent reporting regarding the Russian oligarchs, which are actually the Rothschild oligarchs, also, rumor has it that most of the Jewish charities claiming to have been swindled by Madoff have offices in Israel, and that they're being notified that the money they claim he stole is immediately available to them in Israel. And it's further rumored that the so-called Hollywood celebrity clients that were defrauded would be made good from Israeli sources, and that many of these Hollywood victims were told in advance by Madoff that their money was being transferred to Israel, because the USA was going down. And there are also rumors in the European Union banking circles that any misunderstandings between them and Madoff would be made good. Mike Mukasey's son is the lead lawyer for Madoff's key operative. So as per your recent reporting, we're looking at 3 to 5 years for Madoff, or possibly a paid-for pardon by Bush before he leaves office. So I think that that's probably in the cards, that a paid-for pardon by Bush before he leaves office. Now, this guy, Mike Mukasey, all right, now this Mukasey, he's a Jew. He's the attorney general. And his son now is the lead lawyer for Madoff's key operative. So it's kind of an incestuous operation over here. But bear in mind that this isn't an accident. This is well designed and put into practice, and it just works like a shot. It has been working for the last, 100 years or more. And the average Joe Sixpack American or Frenchman or Englishman or German cannot figure out what the hell is being done to him. Haven't got a clue. But this economic meltdown around the world is orchestrated. Hell, this thing's being executed. This is like a military operation. Just all the dominoes are falling right into place. No fuss, no muss. And the only reason, the only way that they're able to do this and get away with it is because you people will not practice just weights and balances, and you will not practice thou shalt not steal. Now, our founding fathers gave us a gold clause in our Constitution. They gave us gold and silver money. Moses gave us laws and instructions at Mount Sinai that he got directly from our Creator himself. He said, don't use unjust weights and balances, and thou shalt not steal, and we're going to practice personal, private property rights. When we did that, we became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world. When you Englishmen did it, you became the wealthiest, most powerful, the world's leading industrial power, and the world's number one empire. And then when you deviated from gold and silver and you went to paper, you lost your empire. And we Americans, when we went to paper, have now lost our empire. We're going into national captivity. Now that's the results that come from the violation of these laws, poverty and national captivity, which is the natural state of mankind. Poverty and national captivity, slavery, serfdom, servitude, is the natural state of humanity. Once in a while, there's a blip in the history of the world where we go through a period of peace and prosperity. We did it during David and Solomon's time for about 80 years. We went through it here in the United States. We went through it in the British Empire years. We Israelites from time to time have come back and practiced the Ten Commandment model. And when we do, we get rich. We make a lot of money. We were very successful people. And then when we get successful, then we go back to practicing the Babylonian mystery religion. That takes us back to poverty. Then it puts us back into national captivity and serfdom and servitude again. And that's where we're headed. Here's a fourth letter. It says, rumor has it that Madoff made all of this so-called Ponzi scheme money disappear by way of the New York City branch of the Israel Discount Bank, which is owned and controlled by the Bromfman family. That's spelled B-R-O-N-F-M-A-N, Bromfman, Bromfman family. The kingpins of the Zionist matrix were all involved in the scam to make the money disappear. Madoff was national treasurer of the American Jewish Congress and also the New York City branch of Yeshiva University. His big buddy at Yeshiva University was a guy named Cy Sims, actually Mearns, who also happens to be a director kingpin of Israel Discount Bank of New York. Madoff was chairman of the Sims Business School at Yeshiva University with his partner, Cy Sims Mearns. Israel Discount Bank is at the epicenter of the 9/11 funding food chain, along with the Bromfman family and the Mossad. All of these fanatical Zionists involved in the 9/11 atrocity see 9/11 as a Crimes of Zionist Patriots type event, like the blowing up of the King David Hotel that was full of hundreds of sleeping British soldiers at the time, that they did in order to further the interests of Israel at the expense of the United States and 3,000 victims on 9/11 who came from 72 countries. The Zionists do not see this as sedition or as treason, and as such, they're all hidden in plain sight, living and working in the United States. On December 17, 2005, $2.2 billion was looted and disappeared from Brazil and transmitted from Brazil through the Israel Discount Bank of New York. On November the 2nd, 2006, another nest egg of $35.4 billion in third-party wire transfers was laundered and disappeared through the Israel Discount Bank of New York. None of the above would have ever come out except for the fact that in November, big investors in Madoff's fund tried to withdraw approximately $7 billion and were not able to do so. Madoff is just the latest name in a Zionist criminal rogues gallery whose name has popped up on the corporate media's radar screen. But he isn't any different than previously disgraced Zionist master criminals such as Richard Fuld of Lehman Brothers, Sanford Wheel of Citibank, and Maurice Greenberg of AIG. But as you well know, that to expose a Zionist master criminal as having committed a criminal act is a worse crime than the crime or crimes that they have committed. They will, in a nanosecond, sacrifice the lives of 300 million Americans if they think it furthers their interests of 5 million of their Zionist co-religionists living in Israel. Now, the WTC Center towers on the 9/11 collapse in a perfect pancake freefall in just 8 seconds. That's the World Trade Center. The fly in the ointment in all of their criminal scams is that non-Zionist co-religionists such as myself. Such as myself. Now, here's a fellow Jew who is a non-Zionist. So let me pause right here for those of you that are virgins in Hollywood. The Jewish religion has an organization called Zion or Zionists, just like the Catholics have an organization called the Jesuits. Now, the Zionists are the political arm of Judaism in the same way that the Jesuit order is the political arm of the Pope. And the average Catholic, he knows nothing about the Jesuit order. Just like the average Jew doesn't know anything about the Zionist order. They may think they do, but when you get down to looking into the history of it, they don't know very much about it. So here's a Jew writing a letter here to Robert Chapman and saying, okay, now I'm not a Zionist, but the fly in the ointment in all of their criminal scams is that non-Zionist co-religionists like myself are starting to see them as the Meyer Lansky criminals that they really are. Now, maybe the subscriber base can see with 2020 hindsight that the money to fund the 9/11 atrocity was small change to these master criminals, who all believe their own Caligula, Attila the Hun, quasi-religious, theocratic totalitarianism logic. This is the Meyer Lansky theocracy running the USA government and every other government in the world today. Bernie Madoff is at the top of the food chain in this clique, enjoying his house arrest in a multi-million dollar penthouse in New York City. As you have pointed out countless times in the International Forecaster and on radio, they own the system, and they do what they want. So this guy, Bernie Madoff, over here, now let's see if we can make a little prediction here. He will never spend a day in jail, and if he does, it'll be damn few days. I mean, they might take him down, book him in, and run him through the process. The ultimate end is that Bernie Madoff will spend the rest of his life in retirement in Israel. That's the bottom line. So let's see if President Bush pardons Bernie Madoff. Tuck it away in your heart, and you'll see, and we will see, whether or not that comes to pass. Now, while we're on that subject over here, I got a story to tell you here from a guy named Harold Wallace Rosenthal, an interview that happened back in 1972 by a reporter by the name of Walter White of Western Front. We'll get into that when we come back. Meanwhile, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417 217-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. In the Law Hour, an editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give, that doesn't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, they're mine alone, they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the year 2008 in review. Quite a year this past year, without a doubt. Now, in order to help you listeners out there get your feet on the ground so that you can better understand this economic meltdown, this isn't just a recession that's going to end in May. This is the Great Depression number 2, which is leading us into the Great Tribulation, spoken of by some 30 prophets and prophecies in the Scripture, and particularly Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, which is correlated in the New Testament, or referenced in the New Testament, in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. In case you wanted to look at that, why don't you write that down? That's Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, Matthew 24, Mark 13, and then Luke 21. Now, the entire book of Revelation is a corollary of these five chapters that deal with this end time age and the second coming. And we are entering a very unique period of Earth's history. Never before have we seen an economic meltdown like this. And these meltdowns in times past have always led to war. But they've always been regional in nature until we got to World War I and World War II. And now we're on the verge of World War III. And you can rest assured that that's going to be the ultimate outcome. It's always been that way in the past. History repeats itself. So take it from there. Now, in order for you to have a better understanding of how to avoid the catastrophe that's about to befall us all, we need to have a little better handle on international geopolitics. And I can't think of a better handle on international geopolitics than the Bible. It is a geopolitical textbook. That's what it's written for. It's a book on government. And the religious people got hold of it, and they turned it into a religious tirade. Totally misrepresented the content and the context of the document. Now, in relation to that, in the secular side over here, there's reality, and then there's the mainstream media. The reality comes from the underground newsletters, such as the International Forecaster, The Privateer, The Money Changer, The McIlvany Report, Gary North's Remnant Review, and so on. Now, these guys are like prophets in the wilderness, you know, like John the Baptist, you know, was out in the wilderness preaching, you know, a preacher in the wilderness. Not very many people hear what these people have to say. The broad majority of people don't hear what's going on. And, of course, Katie Couric, Brian Williams, and Charlie Gibson get paid millions of dollars a year to keep you people off track, off your game, so that you never figure out what the hell's going on. if you could get your feet on the ground and figure out what's going on, you could act in your own self-interest. I mean, hell, you people aren't dumb. But that's what deception's all about. See, deception is the modality that we use to get you to make bad decisions. If we can get you to make bad decisions, we can profit off of your bad decision. If I can get you to invest for the long term in the stock market, as a broker or as an investment banker, I can make money off of your bad decision. You're not going to make any profit off of that, but I'm going to make my commissions. I'm going to make money, but you're not. If I can get you to invest in paper money and unjust weights and balances, stocks and bonds and things like that, then I can make money, but you're going to lose money, but then I don't care about how much money you lose. Now, there's a group of people that are behind all of this, and this isn't going on accidentally, and a fellow by the name of Harold Rosenthal gave an interview to a Christian by the name of Walter White, back in 1972. Now, Rosenthal, because of this interview, was later killed. He was on an airplane, a TWA airplane, in 1977, and it was hijacked by Arabs, I guess, Arab terrorists. And these Arab terrorists killed one man on that flight, and it was a Jew by the name of Harold Rosenthal. Now, he got killed because he gave this interview, so I thought I'd share this interview, because this interview dovetails now with the Protocols of the Learned Elders, which were published by Henry Ford back in 1920. Now, the Jews and I say Jews, I'm going to say the Zionists, have denied that these protocols have anything to do with Zionism, and that they're a hoax perpetrated by anti-Semitic forces. But let's take a look at some of these statements in here, because the truth of the matter is, all of these protocols have already come to pass. So I'm not going to tell you something that's going to happen in the future, or that I think is going to happen based upon what's going on. Hell, this is already a done deal. And Rosenthal made that observation in his interview. He said, "We just have not announced to you yet that we have taken you captive." And he said, "It's not in our best interest to ever tell you that you've been taken captive." You see, what you do is you tell people that they're free. And if they believe that they're free, well, then there isn't anything that you need to do to hold them captive. They'll hold themselves captive. See, Americans brag about their freedoms. Excuse me. We have a Second Amendment here in our Constitution, and it guarantees us the right to keep and bear arms. This year, 2008, the Supreme Court, in a very narrow decision, upheld that principle of keeping and bearing arms. But we have 25,000 gun control regulations on the books. Saddam Hussein, who was running this god-awful tyranny over in Iraq, remember that? Listen, the people of Iraq under Saddam Hussein could have fully automatic weapons and go out on Main Street and fire them into the air. They didn't get gun control until the American occupation. Get this. The second plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for a heavy progressive income tax. Second plank. Heavy progressive income tax. We Americans have been saddled with this heavy progressive income tax since 1913. Saddam Hussein never had an income tax in Iraq. Not until the Americans came in with the American occupation and gave them an income tax. Now listen, boys and girls, the reality of it is, you've been sold a bill of goods when somebody said you're living in the freest country in the world. And it is true. Under our Constitution, we have freedoms. But those freedoms have now been eroded. Now, Rosenthal wants to take credit because he's a Zionist. He wants to take credit for it. And so, in a highly confidential interview with a Jewish administrative assistant to one of this nation's ranking senators, he said, "It's a marvel that the American people do not rise up and drive every Jew out of this country." Now, Rosenthal was the administrative assistant to a New York senator. Now, I've forgotten his name. It's back in the 1970s. So whoever was senator back in 1970 in New York State, one of the senators. Now, this Jew, Mr. Harold Wallace Rosenthal, made this statement after admitting Jewish dominance in all significant national programs. And he said, "We Jews continue to be amazed with the ease by which Christian Americans have fallen into our hands. While the naive Americans wait for Khrushchev to bury them, we have taught them to submit to our every demand." That's quite a statement. Now, the Jewish bankers. Now, this is Henry Paulson and Ben Bernanke. Just walked into Congress and said, "Give us $700 billion," and by God, they just gave it to them. Now, the auto industry over here, which employs 3 million people, 3 million Americans make their living off of automobiles. It's actually more than that, but anyway, the big three employ 3 million people. Not directly at General Motors, but the parts and suppliers and dealers and the mechanics that work at your local Mr. Goodwrench, you know, they're all dependent upon the auto industry. They come to Washington and say, "Give us $30 billion," and the answer is hell no. The bankers walk in with a one-page note that says, "Give us $700 billion," and the Congress falls all over itself. No strings attached. I mean, just here's the money. And what in the hell does that tell you? You know, wake up. Let's smell the coffee here. If there's one group of people that need and are more valuable to the American economy than anybody else, it's the American auto industry. They employ 3 million people. The banking industry doesn't employ 3 million people, and furthermore, they're the cause of the economic catastrophe that's befalling us. And so we reward them by giving them $700 billion and punish the workers over here by telling them, hell no, go to hell. Now, when Wallace was asked how a nation could be captured without their even knowing it, Rosenthal attributed this victory to absolute control of the media. And he boasted of Jewish control of all news. Any newspaper which refused to acquiesce to controlled news was brought to its knees by withdrawing advertising. Failing in this, the Jews stopped the supply of newsprint and ink. It's a very simple matter, he stated. Total control of the news media. All right, that's protocol number 12. What does the 12th protocol call for? Do you know? Have you ever read the protocols of the learned elders? Well, let me flip through here and let me find protocol number 12. And it deals with the press. I don't know how many protocols there are. There's probably 50 over here. I got about 10 or 15 of the better ones. And just bear with me now. I'm old and I'm slow, but I'm flipping through my protocols here. It's number 12 is what we're looking for. Here we are. It says, "We shall handle the press in the following manner. We shall saddle it and keep tight rein upon it. And we shall do the same also with other printed matter. For of what use is it to rid ourselves of attacks in the press if we remain exposed to criticism through pamphlets and books? Not one announcement will reach the people save under our supervision. We have attained this at the present time to the extent that all news is received through several agencies in which it is centralized from all parts of the world." Remember, that's AP, UP, and Reuters. "Now, literature and journalism are two most important educational forces, and consequently our government will become the owner of most of the journals. And if we permit 10 private journals, we shall organize 30 of our own. And so on. This must not be suspected by the public, for which reason all of the journals published by us will be externally of the most contrary opinions and tendencies, thus evoking confidence in them and attracting our unsuspecting opponents, who thus will be caught in our trap and rendered harmless." That's the 12th protocol, which is precisely what Rosenthal said. Now remember, Rosenthal is the administrative assistant to a New York senator back in 1970. And he said, "How are we able to do this? We control the media." So you watch 60 Minutes and you watch 2020 and you watch the Lehr News Hour and you say, wow, boy, these guys are just arguing and fighting back and forth. Listen, watch the Lehr News Hour. And when they're talking about banking and the economy and they're talking about the economic crisis, in every case, it's two bankers who are telling you that they're arguing over the nitty-gritty of how to give you more paper money. Never have you ever seen a Ron Paul come into the Lehr News Hour and say, the solution to the economic crisis is to go back to gold and silver coin, which is what God told us in the Ten Commandments. Never. Never. You're never going to have gold and silver coin. The bankers aren't going to allow it. And so, this prophecy over here, which says, if we permit 10 private journals, we shall organize 30 of our own. And this must not be suspected by the public, for which reason all of the journals published by us will be externally of the most contrary opinions and tendencies. God, it just sounds like they're just arguing over this, and just one side is on one side, and the other side's on the other side. Hell, they're both on the same side. The Republicans and Democrats are on the same side as the New York bankers, and General Electric, and General Motors, and everybody else. All the big industries are all on the same side. All working for the same New World Order goal. He was then asked about men in high political office, and Rosenthal said that no one in the last three decades has achieved any political power in the United States without Jewish approval. Americans have not had a presidential choice since 1932. Roosevelt was our man, and every president since has been our man. All right, let's take a look. Who were the biggest political contributors to the McCain and Obama campaign? It was the bankers. They bankroll both sides. Now, there was a dark horse. A guy named Ron Paul came in there and said, what we need to do is go back to gold and silver, which is what our Constitution calls for at Article 1, Section 10. No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. You saw what happened to Ron Paul. You saw what happened to Ross Perot. You saw what happened to Steve Forbes. I mean, the reformers come up here, say, and you people want change. And Barack Obama and John McCain said, I'm the agent of change. And so the both of them are arguing and fighting. Was John McCain going to come in here and repeal the Federal Reserve Act? Is Barack Obama going to repeal the Federal Reserve Act? Do you think you're going to get gold and silver coin in place of paper money? Huh? Come on, guys. Let's wake up and smell the coffee here. He went on to say, when the U.S. foreign policy was mentioned, the bedroom confidence of the interview was all but set aside. With disdain and mockery, Rosenthal sneered at the American stupidity when he said, quote, it is Zionist communist policy from beginning to end. And yet the citizens of America think this Jewish policy will benefit America. He cited detente and Angola as examples of Jewish diplomacy. The credulous nature of Americans drew only contempt from him. The interview continued on an almost omniscient plane. He said, we Jews have put issue upon issue to the American people. Then, we promote both sides of the issue as confusion reigns. With their eyes fixed on the issues, they fail to see who is behind every scene. We Jews toy with the American public like a cat toys with a mouse. The blood of the masses will flow as we wait for our day of world victory, Mr. Rosenthal added coldly. Well, let's take a look at that. He said, listen to this now, he says, we Jews have put issue upon issue to the American people. And that's what they're doing right now. They're saying, we're going to have deflation. My God, there's deflation coming. We've got to prime the pump. Okay, so now you're going to prime the pump. And this is going to solve your economic crisis. And so we're almost to the bottom, they're telling us. And you got Republicans and Democrats. Bipartisan support, they call it. Bipartisan support. But they control both sides. No wonder they got bipartisan support.
And the few lone voices in the wilderness, like the international forecaster, or the privateer, or the money changer, or McIlvaney's report, or intelligence report, hell, those are voices crying in the wilderness. Now, you can sit there and say, well, that guy Gordon, you're just anti-Semitic. No. I'm descended from Judah. I'm not outside the loop here at all. I read that to you a little while ago. There is a fella. I'm a non-Zionist Jew. Came from Judah, from the Zerah line. Our people left Egypt before Moses, and we settled in Zaragoza, Spain, and in Scotland and Ireland, the British Isles. Our people are called the Picts. I mean, we're pagans for the pagans. And in Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, there's a group of people out here that call themselves Jews and are not, but do lie. They're liars. And these people are in control of the United States of America. Well, that's no big deal. They're also in control of France and Germany. They're also in control of South Korea, Taiwan, China, and Japan. And they've got a goal, and they want to create a world government through the United Nations, and they're going to succeed for a very short period of time. So the book of Revelation, here's God himself through John, the Apostle John, telling us that they're going to succeed in their goal. But it's going to usher in a time of the most god-awful, bloody revolution and war that mankind has ever seen. And it's a result of what the Bible calls sin. Sin is criminal behavior. Sin is the violation of the law. In 1 John 3, verse 4, it tells us sin is the transgression of the law. So you want to know why it is that you've got an economic crisis, an economic catastrophe? Well, the Bible tells you it's sin. You want to use unjust weights and balances. You people out there absolutely insist on using your credit cards, Federal Reserve notes, and putting your money in the bank, and paying an income tax, the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, dealing with this central bank called the Federal Reserve and their Federal Reserve notes, and sending your children to public school so that they can be educated in communism instead of the Ten Commandments. And they have driven the Ten Commandments totally out of your public schools. I mean, hell, it's against the law to bring the Ten Commandments in public school. That isn't going to happen. And as a result of that, we get an outcome. And that outcome now is this economic collapse. All right. Now, what we need is a solution to that. It's very simple. Very simple. You quit practicing unjust weights and balances, and you start making money. Now, I teach a business school. I'm going to tell you about it. Business school. From the Ten Commandment model. The same model that our founding fathers gave us at Article 1, Section 10, when they said, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. The same model that Moses gave us at Mount Sinai that said, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Do not deal in paper money. Don't deal in credit, usury, and debt. Now, if you go back to this Ten Commandment model, it doesn't require that we vote in the Democrats or Republicans. It just requires that you stop breaking that law. And then prosperity comes from it. Now, we're going into a Great Depression, but there's great business opportunity right on the horizon. I mean, there's opportunity out there like you can't believe. Hey, we'll take this up again next time, talking about the hidden enemy over here and the international forecaster and the review of 2008 next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, if I can find my paper over here, what did I do with my closing statement here? I lose my statement here. Hang on. Let me remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 112 countries daily. over the internet radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.